Before we get started with the program today, I want to thank everybody. If you contributed to Wisconsin Public Radio during our one-day drive, thank you so much for doing that. We had 3,500 or so people pledge. So we have some new members, about 700 new members to the Wisconsin Public Radio Association, and we raised $326,000, just a little over that, to help the networks of Wisconsin Public Radio send you programs just like this one. And I'm really glad. Thanks again. It's really well appreciated. And I tell you what, I'm really glad to welcome Joanne Klusendorf to the program today. Usually we talk by phone when she's on, but today she's with me in the studio because today's the Geology Day at the Capitol, so she's down for that. And she decided just to walk on down and visit with me. So I'm really great to have her here in the studio instead of over the phone like we usually talk. She's the director of the Weiss Earth Science Museum at the UW Fox Valley in Menasha. It's the official state mineralogical museum of Wisconsin. She is the also an adjunct professor at UW Fox Valley. She's been honored for outstanding contributions to public understanding of the geosciences, and she does a great job. The museum is open Fridays from 12 to 7, Saturdays from 10 to 5, and Sundays from 1 to 5, and Mondays through Thursday from 12 to 4. So there's Hey, Joanne, welcome, by the way.
Hi, Larry. It's great to be back.
Yeah, you guys are really really busy. And I was looking at the site there and the description of what goes on there. And there are a lot of interactive things for adults and kids.
Oh, you bet. We've got a place where you can make your own earthquake. And we have a place where you can, a kiosk where you can shoot off a blast in a quarry and shoot down a few thousand tons of rock via video, of course. And you can walk through a lead mine tunnel. And we have some great dinosaur material that is now ours thanks to the generosity of Dr. Bruce Dance, who purchased these items and then donated them to the museum. We have a dinosaur nest with 22 eggs in it.
Oh, my goodness.
And we have a replica skull of T-Rex, which is 5 feet long. We have a dinosaur thigh bone that you can actually touch. And then we have another complete little dinosaur all curled up in a ball, and you can see his gizzard stones, which we call gastroliths when you're talking dinosaurs. But it shows the relationship that dinosaurs have with birds.
And that's all to be seen at the Weiss Museum. And Geology Day at the Capitol, also it's the year of the Niagara Escarpment. Now, I'll bet somebody's saying, what the heck's a Niagara Escarpment? And why do we have a year for it?
The Niagara Escarpment is frequently known in Wisconsin as the ledge. Up in Wisconsin, up in Door County, they call it the bluff. So if you know the ledge or the bluff, that's the Niagara Escarpment. And it's actually a ridge of rock that runs somewhat discontinuously from Waukesha County, Wisconsin, up towards the east side of Lake Winnebago, up through Door County, up to the UP, on into southern Ontario, and then out into western New York. And it's actually the same ridge of rocks that Niagara Falls flows over. And that's why it's called the Niagara Escarpment.
Ah, cool. What distinguishes it as an escarpment?
An escarpment refers to a very sharp, flat cliff face, a steep cliff face, and how that forms in an escarpment like this is erosion. You have soft rocks like shale underneath hard rocks like limestone, mm-hmm. and when the soft rocks erode out from underneath, the hard rocks above sort of break off in these sharp cliff faces.
And they're really something to see.
Yes, I mean, they are.
Beautiful, beautiful sight to see.
Yep, and they've actually played quite a role in history, both in Wisconsin and within the country. And it's an international feature. And in Ontario, it's actually a world biosphere reserve. So it's really has international importance just because of its biologic diversity.
Now, how has it played a role in our history here in Wisconsin?
First of all, because of the escarpment, people in New York had to build the Erie Canal because they had to go through the escarpment to get between the lakes. And so by doing that, they opened up settlement of what was then the Northwest Territories, which is what Wisconsin was in.
Yeah.
And that's how people started to come to Wisconsin in any great numbers. And then, of course, there's the actual resources of the escarpment. It's made out of a rock called dolomite, which is actually a kind of of limestone with magnesium in it, and don't have to worry about all that chemistry stuff. Mm-hmm. But it when you burn it in a lime kiln, you make a very pure kind of lime, which used to be used for mortar. If you wanted to stick bricks together, logs in a log cabin, mm-hmm. anything, you needed this mortar. And Wisconsin was known in the United States as making some of the best lime anywhere. So we shipped it all over the United States from mostly the Niagara Escarpment. And, of course, there's also the fact that we found iron ore in the Niagara Escarpment. All the way back in the 1850s in Dodge County near Mayville, they found iron ore, which, of course, was very important. Cast iron products were made from it. And, of course, in 1850s, when they first found it, they exclaimed in all the newspapers that it was inexhaustible reserves.
And of that course, doesn't happen.
Yeah, but in the 1920s, they were out of business. But there were big smelters and furnaces in Mayville, and the industry carried on for about 75 years or so.
So, yeah, there was one over by near Fond du Lac, wasn't it?
It's actually, there were some smelters all over the place, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. The main industry was in Mayville and then around the Nita area.
Well, we have some callers online. By the way, if you'd like to join in, feel free. The number 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, and that address is talk@wpr.org. Feel free to join us. Ryan in Heartland, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Ryan. Thanks for calling.
Howdy. I was just calling because I was wondering if, you know, she was talking about the bluffs, and I was just out camping out by the bluffs on April 14th, and just wondered if she was going to touch on the meteor that fell at 10 p.m. that we saw.
Okay, I can tell you, talk a little bit about the meteorite. Yep. It was, I guess, really something to see. Unfortunately, I didn't see it, but I've talked to people who did see it, and I personally haven't. People have been bringing specimens into the museum to have identified, saying that they found them and they thought they fell from the meteorite, but actually none of the specimens we've seen were actually meteorite pieces. So there's very specific characteristics of true meteorites, and they're pretty easy to identify when you look at them in that way. And the other thing to remember is when meteorites, even when you see them like that with bright flash in the sky and stuff, that's actually burning up a lot of the material as it's coming through the atmosphere, and it can actually vaporize the actual meteorite body itself. So sometimes you don't even get very much in the way of meteorite material. That big crater out in Arizona, Meteor Crater or the Barringer Crater, actually has almost no meteorite material associated with it, just big crater. So I guess when I heard about the meteorite spectacular light show in Wisconsin here, I thought, uh-oh, we're going to see a lot of non-meteorites, or what they call meteor wrongs.
There you have it, Ryan. Thanks for calling. And it was quite a sight. I saw the flash and heard the, I thought it was lightning. I didn't actually see it go across, but the sky lit up, and I thought, boy, that's thunder, too. Are we getting rain?
Like a sonic boom.
Oh, man. Laura in Madison, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Laura. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I just wanted to comment on the iron mines around Iron Ridge and Nita. Yeah, I was fortunate. When I was younger, I grew up in the Milwaukee area. When I was younger, I was a spelunker, and there weren't many places near Milwaukee, many caves, but the iron mine was fairly close. And at that time, it was still open. So it's gated now because of its bat population and how they're trying to protect that. It's one of the largest bat colonies in southeastern Wisconsin. And in any event, I just wanted to tell you it was a very, very interesting place to go. If you'd go there in the wintertime, there were fantastic ice formations in it. And there were it was quite extensive underground. It was kind of unstable. I believe it's oolitic hematite. Type.
That's correct.
Yeah, which is a kind of a soft, very soft stone.
Very crumbly.
Yeah. But it was a very rich deposit, which is why it was mined.
That's absolutely right.
And it was fascinating, and I actually did a report on it in high school in my for my U.S. history class. I did kind of a local history piece.
Oh, sure.
And apparently my teacher found it fascinating, too, because I got an A on it.
There's a great book out there that a local man wrote, and all I can remember is his first name right now. His name is Fred, but it's called When Iron Was King, and it's about 6 inches thick, and it is a fabulous, fabulous history of the iron mining there.
It's a little-known chapter, but a fascinating one.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling.
By the way, you know, that oolitic iron ore that she was talking about, it just means it's made up of little kind of seed or bead-like pieces of iron. And they think that it might have been an ancient soil at one time when this area was underwater a whole bunch of times, under ocean. And every once in a while, there'd be glaciers somewhere on Earth that would cause the water to draw down, and the seafloor would become emergent, and actually soils would form. And they think maybe that's how the Nita iron formed.
And again, Laura, thank you very much for calling. And you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@WPR.org as we talk today about geology with Joanne Klusendorf, director of the Weiss Earth Science Museum. And you have some great exhibitions at the museum, if I'm not mistaken, some that relate to the Niagara Escarpment.
Actually, that's going up this month. It's called The Years of the Niagara Escarpment. Mm-hmm. And we're going to cover everything from how the Niagara Escarpment first formed as mud on the seafloor, going through cultural and historic heritage, and to the present day. So there'll be all kinds of interesting things to understand about the Niagara Escarpment, to learn about the Niagara Escarpment. By the way, you asked me before why we're having a year of the Niagara Escarpment.
Right.
Well, I'd like to thank Representative Al Ott from Calumet County and some of his colleagues who got the proclamation going, and they recognized that the escarpment is part of an international feature that is really very important to history, to culture, to biology and botany and things like that. So, you know, we have one of the oldest cedar trees in the world on the Niagara Escarpment here in Wisconsin.
Is that right?
Yeah, and we have some very unique other plants that live only on the escarpment because of that rock wall that they're sort of hanging to. Not a lot of things can live like that. And there's actually a whole bunch of snails, which I know aren't very exciting fauna, but if you look really closely, you can see these tiny little snails. And they're actually relics of the last ice age. They can live in cracks and crannies in the escarpment because it's so cold there. It's like living when the glaciers were a little further north, you know. And so, and actually, the Niagara Escarpment is why we have Green Bay and Lake Michigan. Because when those glaciers during the last ice age were moving south, that hard ridge of rock actually caused them to the glacier to split into two lobes there. And one carved out Green Bay and one carved out Lake Michigan. So no Niagara Escarpment, no Green Bay, no Green Bay Packers.
Oh. So the Niagara Escarpment is responsible for the Green Bay Packers.
You got it.
Now, that is just a little tidbit I bet no one else listening knew the answer to that question, that comment. Oh, boy. Joanne Klusendorf, our guest today, having some fun talking with her today about geology and the Niagara Escarpment and the geology of Wisconsin. If you have a question, join us at 800-642-1234 or email at talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about the year of the Niagara Escarpment and geology in general with our guest today, Joanne Klusendorf, director of the Weiss Earth Science Museum. By the way, take a look at their website. I just typed in Weiss Earth Science Museum and it popped up for me. And Weiss is W-E-I-S. So you know that. You'll be pleased at what you see there. Maybe we should talk about, before we take calls, we have quite a few callers online, but let's talk about how this escarpment was formed. Can you
Absolutely.
Fill us in on that?
Be happy to. The rocks that are now in the escarpment were actually once mud on the seafloor of about 430 to 450 million years ago. They were just soft mud. And through time, they get compacted and compressed, and they turn into solid, hard rock. And at some point in the past, these rocks were actually sagged, okay, actually bent down into kind of a bowl-shaped depression sort of underneath the lower peninsula of Michigan now.
Okay.
And the edges of the bowl are what actually form the rock ridge, the escarpment. Okay, so think about, you know, a bowl filled with mud and mud all around it with just the lip of the bowl sticking out. That's kind of the Niagara Escarpment. And there is a there are two main myths that I hear a lot about the Niagara Escarpment that are absolutely false. Number one, it is not a giant reef that covers most of North America there, okay? And in fact, there are virtually no reefs in it in Wisconsin. It's mostly very shallow water. In fact, around Fond du Lac and stuff, and Door County, it would have been water that would have been only maybe ankle deep when it was the bottom of the seafloor. The other myth there is that the escarpment extends into Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. And the rocks of the same age actually go down to those states, but they're not escarpment. So they're not part of the Niagara Escarpment because they're not really exposed. There's very, very few natural outcrops in those states. So the same age rocks, but they're actually all buried. So okay. They're not an escarpment. Escarpment has to be a steep cliff face sticking up out of the ground. So
they can't claim to have any escarpments.
Nope. We're the tail end. Okay.
Oh, and by the way, When Iron Was King, that book, When Iron Was King in Dodge County, you have the name of the author now.
George Frederickson.
George Frederick. Okay, and that was published 1993?
Around then, yeah. I think it's out of print now, but boy, if you can look it up in the library or anything, if you're interested in geology and mining and that kind of thing, it's really worth your time.
The Mayville Historical Society published it, yeah. Orly in Chippewa Falls, we turn to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
I actually have two questions.
Okay.
There used to be a mountain range in Wisconsin, but I can never remember what the name of the mountain range was. I mean, it's an ancient mountain range, and I'm hoping that, you know, your guest would remember this.
Okay, I'll answer that question first. There were a lot of mountain ranges in Wisconsin in the past at various times. The Baraboo Hills are actually just the nub of a high mountain range that used to be in the south-central part of the state. And then there are the mountain ranges that were up in the northern part of the state, like the Pinoki Mountains, the Gogebic, you might have heard. Those areas up there at one time were significantly high mountains. So those are the two main areas that we have anything, you know, left from past mountain ranges. I don't know if that helps at all.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
That was fine.
Okay.
And the other thing, in the Chippewa Falls area, there's a lot of sand mining going on. I always wonder, how did we get so much sand dumped in our area? You know, you go down a little ways and it's just like lots of just that certain type of sand.
You are right, and it's important sand. bet you didn't know that.
Sand mining, and the number one mineral that we export out of Wisconsin is sand, is it not?
It may be, actually. Exporting out of Wisconsin, it may be. The sand came from the number of oceans that came in and went out and came in and went out across the area that's now Wisconsin. The oldest rocks are actually like granites and stuff like that. They're old magmas and volcanic rocks and things. And the granites have a lot of quartz in them. And as oceans would flood over the area and then withdraw again, they would keep on reworking these granites until nothing was left except the quartz, because all those other minerals wear away. Whereas quartz is very hard and durable. And the reason that we export so much sand from Wisconsin is because of all those generations of currents acting on these old granites and stuff and getting it to this pure quartz. We have a kind of sandstone that is made of little spheres of quartz. And if you've ever looked at marbles packed in a jar, you can see there's lots of space between those spheres and the space is connected. And what that means is that sand like that is great for aquifers, for holding water, and that's where a lot of the municipal aquifers are in Wisconsin. They're way down in the sandstones. And the other thing that they're good for is in petroleum production. And that's what we do. We actually, from Wisconsin, send sand to Saudi Arabia. And I'm sure most people know Saudi Arabia is a desert, okay? And they have lots of sand. But they do not have that mature quartz sand that we do with all those little spherical grains. And what they do with that is when you're trying to recover oil from, most oil wells are not gushers, you know, where it just comes flying out of the ground. You actually have to pump it out. In order to do that, you have to get cracks in the rock open. And what they do is they pump water down there with this sand in a slurry. And the water draws the oil out, and the sand, these little spherical sand grains, allow that to happen while it keeps the cracks open. So it's very important. It's called frack sand for fracturing oil wells.
Well, you are a font of knowledge. I did not know that we sent sand to Saudi Arabia.
Learn something new every day.
Sally in Wayland, Minnesota, we'll turn to you next. Early, thank you, by the way. Sally, on to you now. Hi.
Hey, Larry. Thank you. And thank you to Jim. And thank you especially to your guest. I find this kind of talk completely fascinating. And I love listening to this kind of talk.
Geology rocks.
Thank you. Yeah. Years back, a good old friend of mine, Ralph Smith, had a T-shirt that was the Wisconsin State Soil Antigoes silt loam. Mm-hmm. It was the words and the music to a song.
That's right.
We used to sing it all the time, and I forgot the words.
It's online. Just look up Antigoes silt loam song, and you'll find it.
Do you think I'd be able to find the T-shirt?
It's possible.
Mind?
Yeah.
Awesome.
There's a lot of groups out there.
I don't remember the words anymore. And could you tell me a little bit more about how the Antigoes silt loam was formed and why it's unique to Wisconsin, please?
No, I can't. Sorry. No, I'm a different kind of geologist. It's obviously one of the soils that formed during the last ice age. Wisconsin has hundreds of different kinds of soils. And most of them, because of the last glacier grinding up rocks, you know, and making these rich, fertile soils. And the Antigoes silt loam, I think, is one of the very fertile soils that's been a big boon to agriculture in the state. But that's the most I want to say about it, because Dr. Hohl was the...
Francis Hohl.
Yes, exactly. Was the man. And I don't want to do him any injustice.
Francis Hohl was a professor of soil science. What a great name for a professor
exactly.
of soil science, Hohl. And he was a wonderful man, and he is really responsible for getting Antigoes silt loam named the state soil. He was also quite a musician, and he would play every morning. He'd come to work an hour early and practice a classical piece. I think it was a violin he played. Oh. And he'd play the same piece for a whole year, and then he'd start a new piece. But he always came to work an hour early so he could play for an hour before students arrived. And he was a wonderful guy and a great lecturer.
That is what I've heard. And now it explains why there's a song about
that. That's exactly right. I'm going to look that up, because I'm pretty sure Francis Hohl wrote that song.
I think he did. I'm almost positive.
Thanks a lot for calling, Sally. Appreciate it. Let's turn to Daniel in Rice Lake next. Hi, Daniel. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Daniel.
Hello. Are there any theories why the glacier bypassed the driftless area in southwestern Wisconsin?
Well, there are several ideas. One is that not all the glaciers did bypass that area. It was just the Wisconsinan glacier that did. And then there are others who think that it was just a fluke, you know, that area was bypassed. You know, there's no telling why the glaciers necessarily flow in one direction or the other. And that's really a minor part of the state that it missed, you know. So whether or not any of the earlier glaciers went through the area or not, we don't know. But I will tell you a piece of evidence that I think suggests that there were earlier glaciers in the area, and that is that some of my colleagues at River Falls, University of Wisconsin River Falls, have actually found Cretaceous fossils in that area, which suggests that there were much younger rocks through there, and there are not very many of them. So what happened to them? Well, you know, lots of erosion through millions of years and then more glaciers coming through.
So there you have it, Daniel. Thank you very much for calling. Tony in Mount Horeb, on to you now. Hi, Tony.
Good morning.
Hi.
See, in southern Indiana, there is a state park called Falls of the Ohio that has dolomite exposure with a lot of fossils.
Yep.
And, of course, they get a flush of fossils with the Ohio River.
Yep.
especially in the fall when the river level is lower. But is there anything similar on the escarpment, fossil-wise?
No.
Because there's no exposure from the river?
Well, no, it's actually that the kind of rock, what the seafloor was like when that was sediment, it didn't have a lot of fossils in it. It was mostly, what we have in Wisconsin was mostly quite shallow water during the Silurian period 450 million years ago, and that's the rock on the top of the escarpment. And there are just very, very few fossils in that rock. Where there are fossils is in the escarpment, is in the bottom part of the escarpment, which people usually don't think of as part of the escarpment, but in that Ordovician shale. That actually was normal marine seafloor back in the day, and you can find fossils in that.
Well,
so,
the fault of the Ohio is neat because it shows a lot of fossils from transitional from aquatic to terrestrial forms.
Yeah, and you know the other thing is it shows them in place the way they were actually on the seafloor. It's a fabulous place. I highly recommend it if you're interested in geology to go there.
And as I said, a big flush of fossils usually in the fall when the river level is lower.
Yep, they have a. I think they have a fall fossil festival.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Let's turn to David in Rock Springs. Hello, David.
Hi there. Great show. I've lived on top of some baraboo quartzite for the last 21 years, either in Baraboo or Rock Springs, and I've often think about it. And even though I haven't been around quite as long as they have, I'm curious about when I've seen a topographical or a geological map that seemed to indicate that the quartzite in southern Minnesota and in like Sioux Falls, South Dakota, there's some old area, you know, Sioux Falls is made up of like a similar quartzite. It's a pink quartzite. And I'm wondering, is this old mountain range and that one connected?
I don't believe so, no. It is a similar quartzite-looking quartzite, and it's they're both Precambrian in age, I believe, but they're not from a connected deposit.
Okay.
Yep.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure, go ahead.
Pipestone National Monument, and is that... That seems to be near some quartzite, and is there what created that soft stone? And I've heard that there's a blue pipestone around the Baraboo area.
There is some pipestone or catlinite, which is the name, in Wisconsin in several places. There's some in Barron County. I've heard of some down near Baraboo, and but they're not very large deposits. The largest deposit is the one up in Minnesota by Pipestone, the one you mentioned. And by the way, you go up there, that's a great geologic spot to visit too. And you can see Native Americans actually carving it as they would have in the past. And it's actually a metamorphosed clay. So just like the quartzite is a metamorphosed sandstone, it's a mud that was changed a little bit. And that's why it's still kind of soft, but it has that almost polished look to it and stuff. So you can carve it and polish it, and it holds together.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
there you have it.
Stuff. Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks, David, for calling. Well, let's go to Appleton next. Talk to Kathleen. Hi, Kathleen.
Hello there.
Hi.
I had a question and also a little comment. I'm looking forward to the Niagara Escarpment Month and want to see the exhibit. And I'm a fan of the escarpment partly because it's romantic. My boyfriend and I shared our first kiss at High Cliff. He proposed to me at Niagara Falls, and we hung in the Lake Huron area on Manitoulin Island.
Oh, my God, that's gorgeous.
Part of the escarpment as well. And so it's for lovers, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
But my question was, how many of, besides Green Bay and Lake Michigan, how many of the Great Lakes and or the bodies around there were affected by the escarpment?
You know, the escarpment probably affected all of the Great Lakes except for... it may have just about done everybody.
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah, because I know Huron and Erie, and I'm not sure about Ontario very much. But it had, you know, it had some influence of some kind. Yep.
On all of them.
Yep.
And Lake Superior as well?
That's one I keep forgetting about. Yeah, no, it did not affect Superior. Nope, not at all. I'm sorry about that. Yeah, it was outside of the area of Superior. Sorry. So, you know, stay away from there. That's not romantic.
Oh, it is too. I'll be, as a matter of fact, I'll be taking a look at, I'll be right on the shore. Jim Packard and I will be on the shores of Lake Superior next week on my birthday, May 14th. It's my birthday. Bayfield in Bloom. And we'll be promoting that and talking about that part of the country. And we'll be right on the shore from doing our program. So
fabulous.
I'm telling you, it's very nice. Well, you know that.
Yeah.
You were just teasing.
Yeah, I was.
Thanks, Kathleen.
Thank you.
Let's turn to Maynard, Milwaukee next. Hi there, Maynard.
Good morning, Larry.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hello. Your guest is probably aware that some mining for marl, M-A-R-L, took place there in the Dousman area, say in the late 19th century?
Yep, there was a lot of marl mining around the state, a lot of brickmakers.
Sure. The owners of one company out in that area sort of tried to drum up support by claiming that they had found a vein of coal.
Oh, yeah. There were several coal mines dug for back in the 19th century, one around Oconomowoc, too. What happened is, they found some kind of organic-looking shales down in the Ordovician beneath the limestone, and people thought it was coal. And, of course, being so close to Illinois and the Illinois coal fields, you know, when you don't have a lot of outcrops, you don't, you know, have a lot of rock cores going below the surface and stuff, you're kind of guessing at how things match up. And so it was not an unreasonable idea, except for that there were some... snake oil salesman who decided to make some money off of it. Of course, we did that. They did that with diamonds and gold in Wisconsin, too.
Sure.
And, there are diamonds and there is gold in Wisconsin, but not the kind that you're going to really invest in mining. So, yeah, the coal wasn't really there.
Okay. Thanks, Maynard, for calling. Well, we have more calls. Let's go to Bill in Prade to Sac, excuse me. Hi, Bill.
Hello. I don't understand the geography right here. I don't know if you're familiar. I'm just across the river, right across where the hydroelectric dam is.
No, I don't know Prade to Sac that well.
Well, there's a huge bluff here that is a sandstone, I'm sure, because it's striated, it's layered.
Mm-hmm.
I can see the bluffs from here easily.
Mm-hmm.
And so somewhere between the bluffs and here... had to be where the glacier stopped, didn't it?
I think you're about that area, yeah. Yeah, because if you've got a lot of exposed rock, you're in the driftless area. Yep. Actually, you know, the whole rest of Wisconsin probably looked very much like the driftless area before the last ice age. It's sort of a sad thing to think about when you're a geologist, but we would have had, in fact, if you think about it, southwestern Wisconsin has mesas and buttes very much the same that you would see out west, but for some reason or other, when it's in the Midwest, we call it other things. You're in an area that was actually at one time marine sandstone or kind of shoreline beachy sandstones. And through time, you know, they pile up, turn to rock. And just through millions of years of weathering, because most of that rock around there is about 500 million years old. So there's been a very, very long time of just... regular weathering out in the air and rain and, you know, ice and all that kind of stuff over the millions of years. So you get these craggy bluffs and mostly sandstone in that area. Yep.
But there's some granite if you go up there and walk around in it.
Well.
You go up and hike on it.
Okay. Granite
as, any sense?
As boulders or as actual...
Yeah, just boulders.
Oh, yeah. Well, that means that there must have been some glaciation through there because that's what brought the boulders down.
Yeah, there you have it. And by the way, you might want to take a look at a book called The Roadside Geology of Wisconsin. Robert Dott, D-O-T-T, wrote that book. And it's a great book and covers sort of the geology of the whole state.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does. Uh-huh. Yep.
There you have it. Thank you very much, Bill, for calling.
I have a quick thing I want to make sure I get telling everybody is to go to www.escarpmentnetwork.org, and you will find a place where there is an entire list of events across the Niagara Escarpment in Wisconsin coming up this year that people want to be aware of. There are museum exhibits and wine tasting events and blues, and there are runs and kayak tours and caving, and you will be amazed at the number of things that you can do. Plan your vacation on the escarpment this year.
Okay.
I love the ledge.
And now give us that address. Where do they go again?
Okay, it's www.escarpmentnetwork, all one word, .org.
And there's lots of events connected with it.
Yep, there's a calendar on there with lots of events.
All right, Bill, thanks again. Robert in West Allis.
Good morning.
Hi.
I was raised in New Auburn, Wisconsin. It's a rather interesting area. North of us is, I think, that Marine Park trail up there. South of our little town was the bluffs, the sandstone bluffs, and I've always been fascinated by that because when we used to drill holes, we used to dig holes for telephone poles.
Okay.
We would notice various layers as we go down. We'd go first through a group of sand. Then we'd go through some mud, then we'd go through some rocks, and we always assumed that depended upon how fast the glacier was melting.
No, that's probably the kind of sediment that was on the old ocean floor. That's what those rocks come from. And the glaciers wouldn't alter what is in the actual bedrock, other than, you know, carving it and stuff like that and polishing it on the top.
So there you have it. Thank you, Robert, for calling very much. Now, I want to remind people, too, that they should take a look at the Weiss Earth Science Museum website.
And Weissmuseum.org, real simple.
Weissmuseum.org. And then once again on that escarpment is...
It's the Niagara Escarpment Resource Network is the website for them. And it's just Escarpment Network, all one word, .org.
Well, I tell you what, Joanne, it is always a pleasure. It's great to see you instead of having
here.
To do it by phone.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. You're going back to the Capitol.
Yeah.
Talk to some legislators about geology.
Yes. Tell them how important it is. Geotourism is a concept that is famous around the world, and the United States is very slow, and it's all about using the rocks to bring people in.
Well, we'll use some rocks and we'll bring some people, and hopefully we'll bring you back.
Absolutely. Anytime. Right. Anytime. Love to answer questions for people.
Thank you very much. Joanne Klusendorf, Director of the Weiss Earth Science Museum at the UW Fox Valley in Menasha. It's on Midway Road in Menasha. It's the official state mineral museum of Wisconsin. And Joanne is also an adjunct professor at UW Fox Valley. And she's been often honored. And you can tell she's just a little bit enthusiastic, isn't she? It's fun. Always fun to have her on the program, and I can promise you we will have her back again. We will do it again. But coming up, we're going to talk with you a little bit about allergies. Did you have a little sniffle going on this spring? Jim Packard was sniffling all the time. I had a few sniffles, and I tell you what, allergies were present in at least our neck of the woods. So we'll talk about allergies, their diagnosis, and their treatment with Dr. Tad Johnson. Coming up, he's from Muskego, Wisconsin, board-certified allergist and pediatrist, and he's trained at the Mayo Clinic as well. So great to have him coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.